You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Nicola Tyson. Nicola, thank you so much for being with me today.
Hi.
Nicola, we're going to talk about your show, Need, of course, at Petzl Gallery. I'm really looking forward to talking about this beautiful installation of yours and want to jump right into it. So, you know, I love the title and I loved so much about this work, including how these are being titled, because there are really narratives through here, right? I mean, if I'm not being too glib, there's stories that are being told here, among other things. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, well, I hint at narratives, but there's no narrative there that I would wish to unpack. That, you know, I usually just start off with something or other, and then the painting or the drawing grows its sort of self and takes on and explores multiple aspects. But there is, you know, maybe some little sort of narrative germ in there that started the whole process off. And often when I title things, I just use that. I title them afterwards, so I don't know what I'm going to draw until I start drawing. Then I'll sometimes add a kind of hint or a pun of a title, which just sort of sets everything spinning a little more and adds in another layer. So they're sort of clues, but they're also sometimes not. They might even be decoys.
Well, so let's talk about that, decoys and sort of not. I like that. In Random Attachments, it's an image that I like. You know, it's really curious. It seems like it has a sense of humor, and also, as you're saying, there's other surprises happening there, right? This maybe instead of like unpacking this, we can talk about influences.
Yes,
here.
Yeah. That one perhaps describes best the, or illustrates best the way that that they often grow themselves. I mean, something like the image of the owls feeding their baby is a pretty straightforward image. But this one, Random Attachments, yes, I sort of started off in the middle somewhere, and gradually this creature developed, and then decisions are made after that as to which direction it's going to go in, and then adding in some other characters, and then actually finally the head. So it's sort of so the title Random Attachments, as the show was about need, that was just an amusing title, because it really was like a random development of attachments. So so there's a pun on, you know, random attachments, but also that literally is kind of how the image evolved.
I like that. Yeah, there's so many layers to that, really. So, you know, you're saying it evolved, really. It's that's partly how it evolved as a grouping in terms of like what's happening with what can be characters within this.
Yeah, because I just start drawing. I mean, when I'm drawing small with graphite, it's obviously a more it's a speedier process, because it's a smaller area to conjure up something in. But with these large drawings, it became a sort of process that felt somewhere in between painting and drawing, because I was also using a number of different blacks there with the pastel and the charcoal and everything. So it became a more painterly thing than just working in graphite. And so I just launch and start making marks and start. So sometimes I start with the eyes, but in this particular image, I didn't really. I kind of, or rather, I think I started with the eyes somewhere in the middle there, and then it developed into this other thing. And then you just try and resolve it as an image. So basically, my primary objective is to just make an interesting image that is somewhat challenging. Usually I'd like to I like them to be unsettling in a productive way, so But I do want them to resolve into a successful image and or a successful painting. When I'm painting, when I'm making small drawings, they tend to resolve themselves pretty quickly, because the point of working fast in graphite is to work so quickly that I kind of bypass my any decision making, and then I end up with an image that I really am completely unfamiliar with.
Because of the process itself of using graphite.
Yeah, because I can work much more quickly on the small scale, then I can really work, kind of stay ahead of my kind of rational decision-making brain, and let images sort of download in a way and kind of grow themselves quickly into something that when I've finished working, I look at it and I think I really have no idea where that came from. If I'd set out to make that, I would not have been able to make it, in a contrived kind of conscious way. I could only have made that image by sort of getting out of the way and just working quickly and seeing what sort of downloaded itself or what I conjured up. It's like both directions.
And you were talking
downloaded now because of,
right. And you were talking earlier about the image of owls, which you were saying in some ways it was more straightforward in terms of
It's more recognizably.
Well, the show's title, even, right?
So I meant that, like, by comparison within that show, some of the images are recognizable in that, for instance, the owl, the one with the owls, is, you know, you can tell it's owls and stuff, and that's fairly understandable. But yes, the random attachments one, that was. A lot of people like that image, and that one's more like my smaller drawings in the sense that it's totally unfamiliar to me. I would not have arrived at that image if I'd set out to consciously kind of contrive it. Whereas with the owls one, at a certain point I knew I was drawing owls, and so then I draw owls. Mm. But random attachment sort of did actually just develop out of random elements that gradually I just kind of organized into this convincing sort of group.
It's interesting how that evolves, because you talk about being surprised. It almost sounds like the way printmaking can surprise you. You know, I mean, just in speaking about the medium itself, graphite.
Mm. Well, I know what you mean about printmaking, like, because of accident, you know, you can't control it, and you get these great accidents and different, you know, in that sense. But when I'm drawing small pencil drawings, I don't actually rely so much on. I mean, the things that surprise me are usually more things that develop. I don't know. It's hard to explain because I'm obviously the person in charge, but I really kind of don't quite know where it's all going until it's done, and I tend to do those in just one sitting. So whereas these images in the show took a little while because of the size and the other sort of decisions that had to be made in making those images. But yeah, little sketchbook drawings, which I'm kind of known for, that they're done very quickly and I just don't often know. I'm completely surprised by what comes up. There's simply no premeditation.
Is that a relationship with a kind of unconscious, do you think? That kind of not knowing space? Because that's a very sort of liminal place to be, as opposed to planning.
Oh, yeah, that's
painting,
extremely
planning
fertile.
A series.
That's right. I mean, I purposely mine that space. It's very fertile for me, and it's partly because also when I began working after I was a student, I was very involved in reading. You know, I struggled with a lot of feminist theory and everything. It was incredibly inspiring, but I did work for a while conceptually trying to sort of illustrate these theories. And when I finally kind of moved away from that and embraced the fact that I was an intuitive artist, I completely went in the intuitive direction, because it was just so liberating to just not be trying to constantly peg my image to some exterior structuring, you know, to not have my imagination structured by something else before I started trying to make an image. I just wanted to just completely dig down and see what was there, because of course I was also trying to, as a young feminist student, my mission was to try and map some kind of female interiority that was missing in the history of art. So going within and just seeing what happened was kind of the right way to go for me in the end, rather than, you know, trying to illustrate some pre-existing theory made in a completely different medium.
And how do you access a state like that? That does sound like a very liberating state. So how is something like that accessed? Because that's a very different way of, a different mindset altogether.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think the pressure cook, the kind of bottleneck I got into was being frustrated by having to constantly be following some kind of set of rules, self-imposed. But I think created a kind of bottleneck and frustration that in the end, and then I didn't work for a little while, and then when I went back to working, but first of all it felt like an act of not desperation, but a kind of, a good kind of desperation. It was just like, okay, you know, I'm just going to do this now, and it may be a complete, I'm going to work like this, and it may be a complete disaster, or it may not, and it turned out to be really interesting. And at first I didn't used to talk to people about my work and early on when I was beginning this process, because I was very protective of it, and it almost felt like a kind of magical connection that I just needed to protect at all costs, so I wouldn't really talk to people about it, the process. And then, because I wanted it to also remain kind of enigmatic to me, so that it was this place I went to or accessed. And then, yeah, over the years, it's kind of not so fragile, and I just don't feel so protective in that way.
Yeah, well, it's a process that you've become, and it's not more skilled at, although I guess they could be used, but it's about access, right? It's about state of mind,
yeah,
and a number of psychological elements there, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's like keeping certain coordinates open and to let this happen, yeah. And then once they were kind of locked in, it wasn't a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to kind of retrain my self not to, you know, to trust basically that this would work.
There's one work you mentioned before, I believe it was Motherlode, that sounds like it could in some ways speak to what we're talking about here, but perhaps not. Maybe there's a different meaning there, but Motherlode is as well as a kind of Madonna and Child possibility. It's also
yes, that is a pun. That is a kind of punning title that talks. I've done quite a lot of those kind of images of like Madonna come mother and child image, because it's, you know, a common. The mother child relationship is much, you know, represented in the history of art, but not normally from a woman's perspective. And you know, I like to go into the sort of ambivalence about child rearing and make these images that are not necessarily celebratory. They're not even damning or anything. They're just ambiguous and not, you know, not straightforward kind of joyful celebration or whatever. And there's always this dark humor, of course, in my work. So because I think humor's the best way to persuade people to look at things slightly differently.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because I was going to mention that as well. Humor is a very disarming element, or can be, right? And it's and potentially,
yeah,
it's used that way in your work, as you're saying. It gives you access, mm-hmm, to something that people perhaps don't often have access to, right? It's a letting down of a guard a little bit.
Yeah, and it's a good way to, make kind of unsettling and maybe challenging images, but also make them not friendly, but make it so that they're not hostile. I mean, people, humor is much more persuasive than being hostile, and so there's that. And also, of course, a large part of what I'm doing is simply playing. So, I mean, the playfulness is something I draw on as that helps, to free up stuff. And so within that, there's necessarily going to be a certain amount of humor. But and I just do enjoy humor anyway. But like, it's just part of me. I mean, it's not something I'm actually deploying here in some calculating way. It's very natural to me.
That playfulness is a sense what's being deployed, right? There's a playfulness that's being deployed, which is
Yes.
that seems like an important word there, as
Yes.
opposed to something more self-conscious or whatever the opposite of playfulness
Right.
is, manipulated. I don't know what the.
Yes, absolutely. Because I'm encouraging people to enter that space, and also, to free up the viewer to enter this, playful but slightly challenging space and see what happens. I mean, I'm not trying to dictate to anybody. There's nothing going on in these images that you're supposed to understand in that intellectual way. You're supposed to experience them, and hopefully they give, the viewer an unfamiliar experience.
Well, and as you said earlier, it sounds like, I mean, to come full circle, this is over the course of your career is reconciling the feminist structure that you were schooled in, right? This is
Right.
part of that
Yes.
structure or reaction to that structure, I guess you could say.
Yes, a bit of both. I mean, yeah. I mean, and also, of course, in the 90s when I first started making these images, and was painting, there wasn't much painting. There wasn't any figurative painting around. A few other people, were using the figure, but in completely different ways to me. And so it was, it really felt kind of I was out on a limb. And seems like another pun. But like, yeah, which was exciting, even though a bit at the same time a bit nerve-wracking at first, because that wasn't what people necessarily thought was relevant. So I
Yeah, at
needed
that
to make it
time.
relevant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Thanks for sharing that and everything else here. I want to ask you one more question, and of course the listeners can follow this for more links and potentially go see the works online, but hopefully in person as well. I want to ask you one more thing, a little off topic before we go. What are you reading at the moment?
I actually just read The Stepdaughter by Caroline Blackwood. She's an amazing writer. She was more well known, I mean, sadly, for being Lucian Freud's first wife and muse, but her writing is incredible. And I've just started reading her books, and The Stepdaughter is an astonishing slim volume, and I can't wait to read the rest of her output. She died back in the 90s. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing
So.
that. Yeah, that sounds fascinating. I want to thank you again today for talking to me, Nicole. It's really been a pleasure. Yeah, I wish you well. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for asking me. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.